everybody, it's Sam with Rowdy Alternative. Today we're here with Jared Morris. How are you, man?
Hola, I'm great. Living the dream.
Awesome. You've been keeping busy?
Yeah, trying to. As busy as I can. I mean, between playing music and I still shoe horses a little bit, and my wife trains barrel horses, so we stay pretty busy, but it's all good things.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Are you in, so you live in Texas, is that right? Or you're from Texas?
Yeah, I live in Texas. Well, both, little bit of both. I live in North Texas, like just north of Fort Worth. There's a little rodeo town called Decatur. Where are y'all at? Are y'all in Nashville?
So Ray's Rowdy, like the whole, they're based in Nashville. I'm personally from around Cincinnati, so about 4 hours north of it. So I do everything kind of remotely, but they're all down there. That's where all the magic happens.
Hey, it's all good though. I mean, I'm kind of the same way. I'm sort of a black sheep with the Nashville thing. Not really, because I mean, I just haven't been there much. It's just we're all kind of products of the internet. We can sort of be anywhere in the world, really. And
You're telling me, man. That it was actually kind of funny because, like, whenever I do like research for whoever my guest is, it's like, you know, I always first thing you got to make sure, like, you know, where they're from, that kind of thing. But with you, I was like, damn, why do I like it says Texas, but like, why do I think he's from Nashville? Like, I couldn't figure it out because I know, like, I know Nikki T, who runs Razor. I know he follows your stuff and everything, so it kind of confused me. But glad we got that straightened out.
Yeah, man, for sure. Not opposed to the Nashville thing, but.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So let's hop right into it, man. Just to get some background on you for people who don't know you. What was the music scene in? Did you start playing in Texas when you were like out there, or did you like take a trip to Nashville, or how'd you get started playing like seriously?
Yeah. I mean, I did the whole like play with your buddies thing for a long time, and I actually went to college for like a couple years, 2 or 3 years down in South Florida. And that's where I started playing out at some beach bars and stuff. And I do the cover band thing. But I was from Texas, and you grow up just, if you're from out here, you're pretty aware of the country music scene, especially like the Texas country thing. So it's a lot of local artists, songwriters, like even guys like Randy Rogers or, like in the more red dirt scene with like Turnpike or Stoney LaRue, people like that, they're actually like really, really popular. And, you know, they'll sell 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 tickets. I mean, obviously Turnpike and stuff is way bigger now, but there's such a huge infrastructure in Texas. And you, when you grow up around it though, you don't really, cause you haven't been anywhere else, you don't fully appreciate how extraordinary that is, that local artists get played on local radio stations and they have local fans. So it took me moving away and living in Florida and doing the cover band thing. And I was like, all right, well, I think I want to get back to Texas. I actually always call it the Texas heckle. Like most other parts of the country, if you're playing in a bar and people don't know who you are, they usually like, they'll be like, hey, play something that we actually know. And then when you come back to Texas, usually people at some point during the set, even if they don't know who you are, they'll be like, hey man, why don't you play something that you wrote? So yeah. I call it the Texas heckle. They want to hear like songwriters, which is cool. It's dope. So when I came back, I got plugged into that whole scene, and that's pretty much where I started.
Yeah, that you hit the nail on the head there, man. I lived in Oklahoma and Texas for a little while.
Oh, you get it.
I think I have like kind of a cool point of view on it just from being near Nashville all my life growing up, and then I took some time to live out there. I kind of got a good view on both things, like the more mainstream stuff that's coming out of getting pumped out of Nashville and the areas around here. And then being able to go and see what's brewing in the Texas scene and the red dirt scene. Like when I was out there, like it was right before Co like really blew up and like went like countrywide, you know what I mean? And like,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Like Whiskey Myers, basically all the guys you mentioned, and you're completely right. It's like, I went over there and like, I want to go see a show, right? So I was living in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and they had the tumbleweed there. And I'm looking, I'm like, oh, maybe they got some, you know, some shows I could go see like on a weekend. I don't know anyone on there, like on the schedule. But the thing is, they're popping out there. It was like Reed Southall, Flatland Cavalry, and who are huge out there, but not here. So when I moved when I moved back here, seeing them grow and seeing them come on this side of the country and play all these venues is pretty neat. And like, and I guess you saw that happen while you were playing, if you were in Florida and then moving back, and you know what I mean? So that's kind of a cool, it probably helps creatively too, right? Like when you like get to see all these different kinds of styles, like Florida, Texas, Nashville, even like wherever you are.
Yeah, it definitely cultivates a little bit more of an outside perspective. Like if you have a publishing deal and you're going doing the 9 to 5, 5 days a week, and you're going and sitting in a cubicle trying to write songs, particularly if you're trying to write country songs, which are historically like folk, common man, blue collar, working man type songs, but you're, you know, riding a scooter to an office and you're sitting in there 8 hours a day trying to write songs. That's typically where you're going to get a lot of songs about a lot of stereotypical stuff that, ironically, a lot of like actually like, I guess, country people, if you will, I kind of avoid even using that word because it makes me a little bit. But like country people, Western people, cowboy people, the stereotypical pop country songs, we all kind of like giggle at them because it's like, you know, you hear a Luke Bryan song about like rolling in the hay with your girl. And it's like, man, if you've ever been around any hay, you don't want to roll in it. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. But yeah, that's what you get when you lock yourself in an office building and try to write folk songs. But, you know, there's still a lot of good music that comes out of Nashville, and it's not just country music. That's just such a cool place for music in general. Like, there's all sorts of great, great artists that come out of there. So I think everybody's trying to search for some sort of unique perspective that's genuine and authentic. Some people hit it, some people don't. You know, sometimes I hit it, sometimes I don't. So we're all, I think we're all trying to do that.
Hold on, my bad. I had a phone call pop up. We're good though.
But, I had my alarm go off too, so it's okay.
You're good, man. So it was actually just Nikki T calling me. I'm doing this for you, Nikki T. Quit calling me during this shit, damn it.
Gosh, I'm just kidding. So rude.
but no, yeah, like so, like that is the cool thing. Like when it comes to country music in particular. Like growing up here, and you might have thought the same way with the Texas scene. Like when I thought country music, it was like, okay, what do we got? Florida Georgia Line, Luke Bryan, Blake Shelton.
Yeah.
And like in reality, all you got to go is to like two states over, and there's a whole entire new Rolodex of shit. And it's like it's pretty crazy. Like being able to experience that as an artist for you, like that has to be like you're just hungry for more and more of that, just to different experiences, like different experiences, different opportunities to maybe co-write with people like that, you know, like, do you do much co-writing, any of that stuff?
I don't. It's not really out of any sort of effort to not do so. I've just been such a lone wolf with what I do, and I've been so detached from the industry that it just kind of hasn't really been an option. And then I got interested in playing music as a career to be a songwriter. So the ironic thing is that like now that I have some music that does pretty well, I get hit up by other people or publishing companies or like even like any sort of like label type people. They're like trying to get me to cut other people's songs, or like other writers are like, man, we need a co-write. I really think I could, or I got a song that could really work for you. And I'm like, wait, no, hold on. I have songs that other people could cut. Like, I think we got this backwards. It's kind of funny. It's like, because I've written all my stuff. And like, there's a couple that I've co-wrote with some friends and stuff. But it's just funny that like, you get to a point of success of writing your own music. And then people kind of tell you like, oh, now the professionals will take it from here. And it's like, wait, hold on. I thought I was a pro. Like, what is a pro at it? And then you talk to songwriters who don't have like any substantial cuts. They're barely getting by. They like there's any of their music that they've put out doesn't do particularly well, but yet they're the ones that want to write songs for you. And it's like, well, hold on, maybe we have this a little bit backwards. But that's just another byproduct of the internet and like the way that this whole thing is going. Nobody knows what the heck is happening or how to do it. The industry's changing so fast and changing so much. It's a beautiful thing for like people like me that just want to do their thing. Put out music they want to put out, write the songs they want to write, I'm not opposed to any of those other ways of doing it. It's just, it's sort of been, I just try to do the best with the options that are like available. And I just had to write my own stuff and produce my own records. And it was like the only thing that I didn't have any other opportunities. So that's just what I did.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right.
I guess. I mean, I'm so always like open to the whole reason I got into music initially was just jamming with my buddies. So I'm always, that's the whole point is like, if I was on a desert island writing my songs and had nobody to share them with, it would kind of be, sure, there's like a cathartic nature to it. You get your feelings out and stuff. But if you don't have anybody to share it with, like what the heck's the point to a degree, you know?
Right. And you mentioned the songwriting point of view. And as someone who has no clue how that works, for someone just to be a songwriter, and maybe you could give me some insight on this. How does that whole process work if that's just what they do, is songwriting? Do they submit it to an artist? Is it all word of mouth? Like, do you know how that works?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of, like, all of that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, now you can get potentially some songs to do pretty well on, like, social media, and then you can get some attention that way. But typically, guys are getting, like, publishing deals, so they kind of, like, typically get, like, a salary or something, or they're required to write a certain amount of songs, and then they have representatives within the publishing company that have connections with, like, record labels or managers, and so it typically gets passed around if you have a good song, and then they'll pay for you to cut some demos of it, and then you're able to pass that demo around to some different artists, different labels. Artists are able to hear it, but it's still like most things, you know, who you know to a degree, networking, and just, you know, if you're at a bar and there's an artist and you play a song, and he's like, I love it, and you're able to give him a demo. So it kind of happens in a lot of different ways and shapes and forms. I just haven't had like a huge opportunity to do a lot of that stuff. But actually, I think it's been a blessing in disguise because it's made me dig a little bit more into maybe just me as personally as an artist and like what I want to represent and what I want to write. But it's just different for every person. It's totally different.
Yeah. And like the networking thing, if especially over like social media nowadays, like with it being this time, like that's kind of the name of the game, right? Like if you really want to connect with people quicker and like get your songs out there, or people want to collab on something, like, is that something you have to learn as an artist to do? Like, I could speak on my experience, at least with this, like that's all you have to do. You have to make emails, you have to meet, shake hands and shit. Like, is that kind of like something you had to train yourself and learn to do when you first started out?
Yeah, I think you gradually get better at it. It starts to gradually become a little bit more natural. I would say initially it's a little bit unnatural, and you have to figure out the balance between like genuineness and authenticity while still, I mean, people got to know what you have going on. And it's free marketing. So for like an indie artist, it's the best.
You're good, man. You're good.
I don't know why that alarm keeps going off. I gotta turn it off like 3 times.
You're good. I just texted Nick again and said, I'm on an interview. He called me twice.
You know, tell him Jared thought he was being really rude. It was unacceptable.
Oh, yeah. I will.
But yeah. What was I saying? I don't even remember what I was saying, though.
Networking, something like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, this is the authenticity. I talk to like a lot of artists that are just starting out, and they'll like ask me like, oh, do you think like, you think TikTok's really worth it? You think social media is really worth it? And I'm like, the fact that you even ask me that question, you're like already like totally clueless. It's free.
Yeah.
Totally free. Like, I call it whatever you want. You get to put like your own music videos up on a site that could potentially have like explosive reach. We're talking the kind of reach that like the Super Bowl gets. A Super Bowl commercial gets, I don't know, it's like $100 million for like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But you could potentially put out a video. It's like, what do you call it? Whatever you call it, MTV for TikTok. Like, I don't know. Whatever makes you feel better
about it. It's a tool. That's what it is. Art. It's a tool.
I don't know. I just don't get super hung up on that stuff. Even when TikTok came out and people were like, oh, I'm more of an Instagram guy. And I'm like, the fact that you actually just called yourself an Instagram guy is already super douchey. Like, why are you that attached to social? Like, I don't care. It's just, I care about like music and the art and like I mean, I don't even like the word brand, but brand to me is like kind of like on top of the music, it's like what makes you sort of feel something extra about it. You know, typically when people describe music, they don't describe it by how the music sounds. Maybe in country, people will be like, oh man, this is real country. But even that doesn't really describe what it is. You know, they're not like, oh yeah, he writes the best melodies. Like he always starts on the five, but he loves to like, it's like, no, that's not what anybody ever says. They typically will be like, oh no, yeah, Cody Johnson's like, no, he's got like tattoos, but he's like real cowboy. And like, he does like, he's like loves America and he's from Texas. He's like a Texas guy, but like Texas country. You know? They start using all these words to describe it that have nothing actually to do with music. And that, but that's powerful. Like that's an important piece to the story, in my opinion. Even the way we describe like old classic music and traditional country, like a lot of it was the stories around the artist rather than the actual music.
Yeah.
And like, what a cool way to like directly interact with fans on social media. I just think it's super dope. It's like a huge blessing. So I'm like on the other side of it. I think it's a huge blessing and other people think it's really stupid. But typically those people just, no matter what, they would end up having an excuse to not put their stuff out. That's just the latest excuse to not put in any work. So, but that's my opinion.
No, you're right. And I think like if you talk about the guys back then, like Willie and like Waylon, all them guys, it's like, it's impressive that they like, well, you look back on them now and they basically created, maybe not created, but they are the icons for that outlaw genre. You know what I mean? So it's like, I mean, fuck, now you could, like you said, you have these free tools like TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and or X, whatever the hell it's called today. And you get to put all your stuff out. And it is like, it does, it's weird to call it to brand yourself, but that's kind of like what you have to do. And awesome. And like with you, like when I was looking up your stuff, like you had like a podcast, right, on YouTube?
Yeah.
Yeah, it, like that was like super cool. I caught myself like I was on like the third episode today, and I wasn't even real. Yeah, you know, because like, and you talk to guys like up and coming guys like Slade Coulter. I know you had on, and even Jared from Co's Band, the drummer, who a lot of guys like Co fans, they don't know who he is unless they really dig in. You know what I mean? So that's just another way that you could like branch out and connect the fans and all that. So
yeah, it's a lot of work, which I think is typically what makes people shy away, but that's like most things in life. If there's a lot of work, a lot of barriers to entry, but to me it's just like a lot of opportunity. You know, a lot of the industry, the old industry, kind of hates this new way of doing things because they can't quite get a stranglehold on it. Like there used to be so many barriers to entry, that's why there wasn't very much music. For one, it costs so much money to record music. There wasn't that many studios. It was all hardware that you had to use. It was all analog gear. So it was just very expensive. And there was sort of a, like a stranglehold on the information too, to be able to learn how to use it. And then now just with like, you know, the digital nature of recording and putting out your music and marketing your music, it's like there's no barriers to any of those like entry points, really. There's some, but not nearly what there used to be. So there's way more music and there's way more opportunity to put your stuff out there. And so a lot of the industry kind of hates it because that's all those middlemen to make, like to get your CD or your vinyl record into whatever store. There was a guy that got paid for that, right? To print it, there was a guy that got paid for that. To get your song on the radio, there was all sorts of people that got paid for that. To get a song cut and just recorded, there was producers and engineers, all sorts of people that got paid in that. And so the digital age of this stuff has sort of cut out a lot of those people. Yep. And I get it. It got rid of their, you know, their livelihood. So I understand that to a certain degree. But also on the flip side, in the purest sense of like an artist being able to do what they do, put it out directly to someone that wants to consume it and like a fan, it's about as pure as I think it's ever been. Short of like sitting on a street corner and just playing music while people walk by, I think it's as pure as it's been. And I don't know if it's ever gonna, I don't know if it'll stay that way forever. Cause like it'll, I can feel it, you know, gradually the industry's starting to get their germs on it. You know,
and they're starting to be able to control it. It's a pendulum. It just swings back and forth. And that's how it's going to go. I fear, but we're in a good spot right now for sure. Like when it comes to independent artists being able to make the reach they do, it's amazing, really.
Yeah, and I'm not at all like opposed to labels or anything, or like industry people, because they can make a lot of great stuff happen to you. It's like, and mm-hmm. so recently I've like in the last year or so I've started having like a lot more of those conversations, and you know, it's like an interesting thing to explore, because like even part of playing music is a lot of it's like intangible. You can't really quantify with like money. Some of it's, you know, like you got to be able to make a living, and I don't want to get screwed over, but at the same time, like when you get with some of these major labels, like the artists that they can let you like collaborate with, mm-hmm. play shows with, all those doors that open, like you're only on earth for that long. And it's like, if you got to play some shows and write with some of these people, it'd be like the coolest thing. Like I'd probably pay all the money to be able to just do it like one time, you know? So that's what they can typically do for you, I think, put you on bigger stages, bigger opportunities. So it's like a question a lot of, I've seen a lot of indie artists that they like to say it's not all about the money, it's all about the art. But then they also tell a lot of labels to FO because it's about the money. So it's a little bit misleading, you know? So then they actually don't get to do as much cool shit as they might actually get, right?
Yeah. And if you do go for it, you have, you know, hundreds, thousands of people calling you a sellout. It's like, no, I think they just want to put food on the table for their families and be able to like live like a decent wage and make some money. Like it's just, people don't realize that they're selfish, I guess. Talking about the fans.
the huge irony is that like a lot of indie artists are just as much as sellouts as the guys signed to a label. Not always, but sometimes mm-hmm. like some of those people are like won't work with anybody because they're so obsessed with keeping everything for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like that exists, and that's not cool either. On the flip side, there's a lot of guys that sign to labels and stuff that I don't really consider to be like very artistic. Mm-hmm. You know, they're purely in it probably for attention, or maybe some monetary gain or things like that. And they're just not actually that creative. But so they need a lot of help as well. So, I mean, dude, it's just freaking, and there's like everybody in between. So that's mm-hmm. where I just get almost to a point where I just do my thing.
Exactly.
Don't really pay a whole lot of attention to what else is going on. It's funny when you first start out, you know, like a bunch of people tell you, like, you just gotta do your thing and don't expect anybody to help you. Don't expect anybody to do anything for you. And like one of my first managers that I had, he told me that. And then we got like a couple years down the road, and I'm so just like, you can either get on the train, get on board, or like get out, because I'm going to keep going. So mm-hmm. you can either like want to work hard with me and want to make some stuff happen, or just go do something else. But like, I don't, like, I'm going to do my thing. And the same guy that like told me, you know, don't expect people to make things happen for you, he ended up telling me, like, he's like, man, you're just unmanageable and you won't let anybody do anything for you. And you just, you know, you just try to do everything. And I'm like, wait,
hold on. Yeah.
It's just like the exact, so all those frustrations. But that's right. All like boring business, music biz stuff. That stuff's existed forever in every walk of life. I don't care if you're like a welder, there's going to be stuff you hate about it. But
right. So like when you hopped on the train yourself, when you started to, when you said, okay, this is what I want to do with my life, like when you made it your profession, how was that? I'm always interested in how these artists handled that first step, because it sounds like the most intimidating thing to me is dropping everything, like quitting your job, whatever, moving to a certain place to do it, to pursue it. Like, how was that process for you?
I actually think that's the worst advice, is to drop everything and just go for it. Like, whatever that is. Like, just go for it. It's like, well, good luck, buddy. Like, having plan Bs and stuff, plan Cs, like, you don't have to be an idiot. And then also, like, you know, I was, when I first started, there was a lot, I've just seen a lot of people that started at the same point that I did. And then, you know, seen some guys go past me, and then I've gone past a lot of some people, and it's just interesting to watch the ebbs and flows of all of it. And there's something to be said about just steadily keeping at it every day and just keeping on working at it and focusing on like what's important and playing the long game, not getting too wrapped up in like the huge, oh, so-and-so's blowing up and blah, 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 blah. Keep doing your thing. Because, like, it, you know, it's a cliche and, like, it's a bumper sticker, but that slow and steady wins the race. It's just so true. But you just see a lot of people that just, like, go full, they go all in. And then they get burnout or whatever. They run out of money or, you know, because they just get these sort of these pipe dream things where it's like they get a record cut and they just think it's going to, like, it's going to change their life, right?
Yeah.
And then at the same time, you got to, like, ask yourself, like, why are you doing this? Are you doing it to have the blow up or making your dreams come true? Like, whatever that means. Like, good luck defining that. What's your dream? Like, just to get more attention? Is that what it is? Because, like, my dream is to make dope music with cool people and to do it for a long time, be able to make a decent living at it. That's my dream. But, like, if your dream is to just be, like, the next Carrie Underwood, good luck. Because that, I mean, there's one of them. You know?
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of them. So maybe we need to define expectations and a little bit. And, like, yeah, starting out, you just saw, I've just seen a lot of guys that just, like, try to do it full time or whatever. Some of them just, you know, they end up sitting on their couch 3 days or 4 days out of the week, and they sit there and smoke weed and drink beer and full time. And then they go play shows on the weekend, right? And, like, I took a little bit more of the route, like, well, I could, like, have a full business where I shoe horses, which that it's unique because that type of work is, like, I'm alone a lot, and that's, like, where I write a lot of songs too. But I was able to make a good living over there, a really good living, and I had to, like, work my butt off to do it over there. But then I had extra money to spend, you know, like, the first 3 years of touring or whatever. Like, I didn't make any money. I was just taking money out of my shoeing business, and I would just pay the guys on the weekend. And it was just money in, money out the other side. I never would have been able to do that if I didn't have some other source of income.
Right.
So full-time, it's like somebody wants to tell me they're like full-time in music. It's like, whoop-de-doo, I was full-time in two different things. Like, yeah. That's what it takes. And then I would write at night. I wrote all the time. That's the other thing. It's like, how bad do you want it? Do you really want it? Like, not even want it. Do you like it? Like, I love it. I write songs all the time. Like, I was at dinner with my wife the other night, and, like, I had to go to the bathroom real quick because I had a melody idea. What's up, babe? That's my wife right there. You're fine.
Hello. <It's> okay. All good.
They're going to be pissed. Dare you. Yeah, the other night I had to, like, go write a melody, you know, on my phone. And it's just kind of like, it's part of the whole thing. But defining it as work and going full time, I don't know. Hopefully that doesn't sound
counter. That's actually like what you're the only person I've interviewed has put it that way. Because a lot of the times, and me being an outsider at all, this is just asking questions to these guys. I always like to ask them that just to see what they say, because I could be wrong here, but is there, like, it seems like there might be a stigma with, like, not doing music full time. Like, if I asked you and said, you know what I mean? And, like, whenever I ask, and they'll just be like, no, I work a job. It's like, you sound ashamed of that. It's like, you're being smart. Like, what do you, like, I'm glad I'm not the only, I thought I was the only person. I'm like, why do you want to dive headfirst into something like
this? I know. It's just ridiculous. Plus, like, what is full-time music? What do you mean full-time? Yeah, I just saw right through it because I hung around people. I was like, oh, you just get high 3 days out of the week. Like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go do something else. Right. And obviously I'm being, like, a bit, you know, facetious.
You're right, though. Everybody, you're speaking, like, the truth.
But, yeah, it's like you really got to be honest with yourself in this thing. There's, like, a tremendous amount of delusion that's involved, and we're all delusional to a certain degree. I mean, you got to write a song that you made up and think it's good enough to play for people, but you got to tread that line. I don't know why people are ashamed about that with, like, trying to just make it happen elsewhere. I think it's like a placebo. They just stay full time, and it's like, well, what is full time? What is full time? Like, you're talking 8 hours a day every day. And then that kind of goes back to the social media thing and, like, the creative side of, like, branding who you are as an artist. I used, like, what would be considered my weakness, not being full time. I used that as my strength. It's like, okay, well, there's not a ton of horseshoers that write songs and put music out. So, like, let's lean into that. So, like, what did I do? Like, I did a bunch of videos of me shoeing horses, and it was about my music. And then that's, like, a defining factor in my thing. So then it leans also into, like, the authenticity with country music. Like, there's a lot of people running around wearing cowboy hats that, you know, whatever. They're probably, you know, if you it's just, it's like you can almost use like one of your weaknesses as your strength. So like I had to go shoe horses for freaking 10, 12 hours a day.
And it like becomes you, like that's your thing.
Yeah, but I got to use it as a way to promote my music. So it was like killing two birds with one stone. So like trying to think outside of the box. And I see a lot more people, I think, doing that now. Like they're not quite as ashamed about maybe working something else or which I think is cool. It's who you are as a person.
Yeah.
That's the cool thing about country. Like if you want to be a pop star, you're supposed to be with a Lambo out on the beach or something. It's totally unattainable. Nobody has it. So yeah, you can't pour concrete and then just be like, oh yeah, and I have a Lamborghini and I'm a big pop star. It's just like, it doesn't quite work out.
Yeah, like country's supposed to be blue collar. Like people forget about that. And it relates to your fans if you're honest and you're like, yeah, I shoe horses or like I work on the farm or something like that. It's like, okay, cool. Yeah. Like you have the right audience. You might as well, like, why wouldn't you lean into it? Why wouldn't you own it?
I love it. Like I think it's like I'll never really quit doing some of that stuff.
Sure.
And that's changed a lot, you know. The kind of the old guard doesn't quite understand maybe the honesty. Mm-hmm. It used to be a little bit more curated. Like the marketing and the music was a little bit more curated, and now you have this just ultra honest, like super raw.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Like the younger generations definitely are seeking some things that are a bit more unfiltered, which is cool. But like most things, we'll probably get 10 years down the road and we want like AI songs or something.
Right. But hey, man, let's talk about I was going through your songs today and I listened to Doggone Cowboy. And man, like I'm a huge Marty Robbins fan. And like you don't really hear Marty Robbins renditions like nowadays. So like I'm just curious as a fan of his, it's like, was there a reason you went with that particular song? Or like what is like does Marty Robbins or that song mean something to you, like in particular?
Well, Marty Robbins was my grandfather's favorite artist. And it's interesting, like out here where I'm at, you know, you can go play these like college bars and you've got like 18, 20, 21 year olds that are like screaming every word to like Big Iron or El Paso. So it's actually quite interesting how it's gained popularity. I mean, obviously the whole cowboy thing has gotten more popular. So I was kind of thinking like, man, there might not be another time in my life where cowboy music is this popular or like this, maybe not use the word popular, but like this well received.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, cause we're talking like those songs are freaking, those are super cowboy and they are like, sparse production.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, you just even think 10 years ago, you think about that even being in like a possibility within country music. Nobody was doing that. So I just thought it was like a good opportunity to be able to put that stuff out. Grandfather's favorite artist. I didn't want to do the stereotypical. Obviously, when you go through like Spotify or something and you see all the Marty songs that have been covered, you know, you see Big Iron and you see El Paso
and
a lot of the main ones. And I picked a couple of those, but I wanted to pick the ones that were maybe not done quite as much. The ones that I really like the most to play live. Yeah. So I ended up doing Doggone. Also coming out, I think this month or the end of this month is one called Master's Call, which is my favorite Marty song of all time. And then Strawberry Roan. But then we had already put out, they weren't Marty songs, but there was like the Johnny Cash song, like Ghost Riders in the Sky. And then, Saddle Tramp was a Marty Robbins song. Then we did like a Dean Martin one too, but I just felt
Which one was that?
My Rifle, Pony and Me.
Oh yeah. I didn't know Dean Martin sang that, bro.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Shit. I thought that movie Rio Bravo. That's my favorite John Wayne movie ever.
That must've been why he was on the cover art then.
Oh yeah, that makes more sense.
It makes a lot more sense now. It's clicking in real time.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. Like my first record was called West of East, and I have a song called West of East. And like in the first pre-chorus, it says like straight out of Rio Bravo scene, somewhere a little west of East. Then you fast forward like 3 or 4 years, and like one my walk-on song is My Rifle, Pony and Me, but it's a remix version that I got from a guy that's like it's like this crazy like house dubstep remix version. And it's like the walk up thing. So
that's sweet.
I like to leave like little breadcrumbs if anybody even cares, you know, to follow them. But
yeah, for sure. So, how would you describe your sound? There's obviously a lot of traditional Western stuff in there. Would you describe it or your style or sound in any certain way, or like, do you like sticking to like what you know, or do you have plans on maybe progressing to something else, something different sounding, or what, where you stand on that?
Yeah, I think it's been a double-edged sword because I actually don't have like a super, super specific definable sound. And so it's been a bit of a double-edged sword because people to a degree like to be able to put you in a box. Mm-hmm. So they easily define it, especially in the industry people, and sometimes listeners like it too. But so after my first record, there probably was some people that liked my first album that are certain songs on there. And then my second album kind of diverted from that to a degree. It just started to have like a little bit more electric guitar sounds and was pulling in some different sounds from the 80s and stuff. And then, so what's interesting is you almost kind of like cull your herd or your audience a little bit where, you know, some people fall off, but then you gain some other ones.
Yeah.
And what I'm kind of just planning on doing is just keeping it fresh. I never sing any different. And I don't really want necessarily my voice to sound different or like the authenticity of the songs to sound any different. But like sonically, some of the sounds are a little bit different. Maybe some instrumentation is different. And I like the idea of my, like the fans that I have just being open to that happening, as opposed to I like watch some other artists that are really big and have successful careers, but they kind of like do the same thing over and over. And then they get to a point where I know they want to do something different, but they can't. Because it's like at that point, culling the herd would be like catastrophic. You know, like it would be massive. Like they suck. Their newest record was terrible. And it's like, but if they did it maybe earlier on, it might be that extreme of a change. And we're not talking. I'm not gonna be doing like trap beats and like rapping over stuff or like we're not talking about right. that. But I do like to keep it fresh. But like we're planning on putting out a whole new record next year. And I call it cowpunch grunge. Like, okay, I don't know if,
cool.
Like, but like, have you ever heard the term, like, if someone's punchy or like punchy cows?
No, like, what's that term?
It's like a term almost of endearment, like out west, where it's like, okay. If somebody's punchy, like they're ranchy, they're super handy. So like, yeah, just like a cowpunch, punching cows, like,
okay,
working calves or anything like that. Doctoring calves. So I call it cowpunch grunge because it's got like a grungy punk element to it, but yet it's still like very, has like a lot of folk aspects to it, like with folk instrumentation, but then there's this like almost dark grunge thing going on.
Yeah.
The more upbeat ones, tempo wise and groove wise, have like a punk thing to them. But most people would just be like, it's funny, like I played a show recently and there was two people that came up to me at the merch booth. Like it was one after another. It was a younger gal that was like, she goes, "Man, I just love that you don't only play like traditional old country stuff." And I was like, "Oh, cool. Yeah, that's awesome. I appreciate it." And the very next person was like an old guy who was like in his 60s or something. And he said, "Man, you know what I love about you? I just love that you only play the old traditional stuff."
So, well, I mean, that means you're doing something right, though. I mean, you got them both hooked.
I hope so. But I hope it like always has. The goal is to always have a level of like authenticity and genuineness to it. People can sniff out when something's just hokey and goofy and pandering. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to do that. But yeah, I mean, everybody just will end up having their own opinions and come up with some pretty wild ones too. So,
right? No, yeah, and like that's funny because like hands down, the coolest thing to me that's about the Texas scene right now is that like it's just when people think Texas music, it's no longer just Texas country music. If you ask someone from Kentucky, "Hey, what do you think the music is coming out of Texas?" They're gonna say country music because it's Texas. But the truth is, it's every goddamn thing. Like, it's rock, it's grunge, it's, you have the country, you have all this shit. And it's like, the thing is, with everyone trying to do like a certain, like, Like, there was a period of time where everyone wanted to go to the rock stuff. Like I mentioned Ko earlier. Ko did. You got people like Austin Mead went to the Ko or the rock side of things. All the Dylan Wheeler. But it's like, you would think that would dilute and that would, you know, you would be like, all right, this is a little much. Like, you have people just trying to do that now, which in some senses may be true. But I think for the majority of the artists out there, like, it's weird. They just all own it. It just seems like a Texas thing. It's just like, oh, okay, let's try grunge now. Let's try rock now. Yeah. And it just feel like they could pull it off. And I don't know how they fucking do it, but they do it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, so is being from that area, is that like have any influence on like the next step you want to take? I know you say you keep it fresh, like to what you want to play, obviously, yeah. But like, does it have any kind of influence on you?
To be honest, the Texas music scene doesn't really. Mm-hmm. It's like I know a lot of those people personally, not like super well, but right. And like a lot of the music that's been coming out of Texas for the last probably handful of years isn't like my favorite style of music. You know, it's kind of interesting down here because it gets pretty like, it gets pretty two-sided down here as well with like this.
Oh, does it?
Like, yeah, I mean, it's either you're either going to try to be the next Cody Johnson, mm-hmm. right? Which kind of has its roots in like, you know, George Strait.
Yeah.
And I'm just being honest. And then.
No, you're right.
Or you go the other side where it's like this pretty heavy rock. I mean, like Jared Easterling's a buddy of mine. He's a drummer for Ko, but like Fit for a King is a metal band. He's a metal drummer.
Yeah.
And like you go to those shows, those Ko shows, and it's like, this is metal. Mm-hmm. Which like, and I don't. Like, if you like it, you like it. Like, it doesn't have any effect on me. I don't care. But if you call it like it is, it's like, and so those two differences, that's like pretty extreme, you know? And so I'm kind of like around in the middle there. So I actually find myself probably closer identifying more a little bit with like some more global artists that
okay.
like more in that like rootsy folk Americana world. That's usually in that, like, cause I'm a little bit of a fish out of water here in some ways.
Yeah.
But like even like I love George Strait, love mm-hmm. him, like love it. Like that would be probably my go-to with my wife to dance or something. Would be like a George Strait tune. I never was super into the metal thing. Like, and we joke about it. Like my drummer loves metal. I joke about it. Jared's trying to get me to go to a metal show. Like we were just talking about it the other day. But it's just not my thing. So like the Ko thing, it's just a little bit heavy for me and my
sure.
Thing. Yeah, so I'm even like a little bit of a fish out of water too. So if I had to like drill it down, I definitely my stuff definitely has a little bit more of like a rootsy folk rock type thing. Which down here doesn't like a lot of people down here don't they think I'm from like Montana or Wyoming or something, which is right. Funny. They're like, oh no kidding, you're from down here? I'm like, yeah. It's not only George Strait cover bands and Ko Westbrook knockoff bands. It's not only that.
Yeah, because that it's funny because like that's what like how I mentioned earlier. Like when I was trying to figure out like, obviously I didn't see like where you were from. Like when I was looking, I was just trying to think about like, okay, does this sound Texas, Nashville? Like, kind of sounds like definitely Western, but I get hints of the folky Appalachian shit too. It's like I can't figure it out.
Love it. See, that's better. That's cooler, man. I like it that way.
Yeah,
And I love Texas, and Texas was the only reason I have any sort of music career.
Right.
And I have a big local following here, for sure. But to answer your question, actually, like, where does some of this stuff come from? Like, in the same way, what I'm saying, like, exactly what, pretty much what Ko was saying, however many years ago it was, like, that dude was doing his own thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, no one understood it, but he was a trendsetter. And he was taking a lot of different influences and making it happen. And like Texas people are like, they're actually pretty like liberal in the sense of just like ideas. Like they're pretty open-minded actually, which is a little different than like the Deep South. Like Texas gets clumped into the Deep South. And I don't mean like liberal politically. That's not
right,
what I mean. I mean like psychological, like just open-mindedness. The Deep South gets, or Texas kind of gets clumped into the Deep South a little bit. But when you come out here, like, even the whole, like, hippie Willie Nelson thing, like, that's unique to Texas. And it does have this streak of, like, just independence to it. And I think it goes, like, back all the way rooted. And if you know anything about Texas history, it's just, like, I don't know if it's in the water. But, like, if you go from Cojo, whether or not you agree with anybody, like, if you go from Cojo to to freaking Willie Nelson, any of these Texas people, you know, even going into Oklahoma and stuff, it's like there's like this streak of independence where it's like, I'm going to do it my way, how I want to do it, get on the train or don't. And a lot of Texas fans are down with that. And so here in the last decade or so, the last 20 years even, Texas has been like a big trendsetter, because like that's the way real art is made, is people taking chances and fans going, yeah, that's dope, I like it. And then the powers that be start to create all the copycats because they found something cool and unique, right?
Right, yeah.
And so I do think that that's woven into like Texas culture where, you know, even getting up in a lot of these bars, you can go play like the freaking honkiest of tonks and, you know, play some stuff that you think might not hit. And like, I'm sure there's going to be some people out there that are like, hell yeah. Like in my set, I play a Billy Idol cover. I play Marty Robbins. I do a Shania Twain song. I do Post Malone. Most 70-year-old ranchers out there dancing with his wife to Billy Idol. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that happens here, you know, and it's cool. So,
yeah. It's you might know him probably, but like the out of Texas, the way you explain that, like how you do like these different styles and stuff. The most impressed I've been in forever is when I went and saw Mitchell Ferguson play.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with him or not. He's like, he's another one. He's kind of like you. You can't nail him down to a certain, you know, if you'd have to put him in a box, you couldn't do it if you tried. He's like bluesy, soulful, country. He has some hip hop shit. It's like, but like what you said, like that's the, you don't know, like what, I don't know what's in the water out there. And it's cool seeing that creep over and influence people in Kentucky, Georgia, Nashville, where you are set in a box. When you know, it's like if you're from Kentucky, it's like, all right, I better sound like Tyler Childers. If you're from Nashville, it's like, okay, I got to go through the whole industry shit. But it's like you have these singer-songwriters out there who will hear people like you or people like, you know, you guys, and like they just shake it all up. They change the whole scene up, and that's what the coolest thing is. You aren't ran by like this pop country, which there's a place for pop country too. Like, I hate saying that term, but like, you know what I mean? Like the mainstream shit that people follow. Yeah. It's just cool to see nowadays. And I think it's as strong as ever for now.
Yeah. To follow up on the pop thing, like I don't not like things because they're popular.
Yeah.
But I don't also like things because they are. You know, it goes both ways. Like, you know, you've probably been around some like music snob type people that it's like, if it's popular, that automatically means it's bad. I'm like, well, that's bullshit.
I used to be one.
And it's lame. Like, it's really lame. Or like when your favorite band gets popular, I get it. If their music starts to suck, like for what you think objectively, it's like changed, it's gotten worse or something, whatever. I get it. But to just, to not like it because a bunch of sorority girls now like it is like kind of douchey. But to only like it because everybody else likes it as well is also kind of lame. You know, it's like, why?
Like
why
you what you like.
I mean, people dress that way. They buy cars because of that. They decorate their house because of that. Like, the herd mentality kind of exists in every little corner of pop culture. But like, just because freaking ranch style homes are popular right now, like I personally think a white house with black trim is ugly. Like objectively, I just think it's dumb and it's ugly and it's boring. But it's popular right now because it's like ranch style architecture. I just think it's stupid, but everybody's building houses like that. But at the same time, if I would have been around in like the '80s or something, or I don't know, if I lived in New Mexico or Arizona now, like I love adobe homes with tile roofs, Spanish tile. I love it. So if I lived down there and everybody was building those and it was popular, I'd be like, yeah, this is dope because I just like it, you know?
Right. I need some wood paneling in my damn basement. I love that shit. All along the walls. Yeah, that's
okay.
But yeah, you're right. You're right. It's just like what you like, man. Like, yeah, just don't be ashamed of it. Don't act like, you know, you're right. But
we all have
Jared, dude.
Pleasures.
Yeah. Thanks for, I know. This was a great conversation. I appreciate you hopping on, man. But before we head out, dude, you kind of hit on it earlier, but give us got anything coming down the pipe? Any new music? Any cool shows you're going to play? Anything like that?
Yeah, I've got the two last Cowboy cover tunes are coming out at the very beginning of June. And then I've got some cool shows. I think I'm going to do another run with Aaron Watson.
Oh, hell yeah.
Up through like Colorado and Wyoming and stuff potentially. And then I've got a big show in Sheridan, Wyoming downtown. That's July, I think 13th. We're actually opening for Aaron at that one, but it's like a huge downtown thing called Wyo Jam. That's going to be super dope.
Nice.
And then the rest of the shows are just all on my website. But then I'll start putting out, I think I have another single coming out middle of the summer. But it'll be like kind of the first single from that record that we'll end up putting out. I'm kind of on the single release train right now. It's like the most fun way to do it. So yeah. I just like doing it.
It's the most efficient way I hear too, ain't it? Like nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, I just put too much work and time and everything into every song. I hate to see them not get some love, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I'm just putting out music all the freaking time. I've got a Patreon too that I put in like a bunch of unreleased tracks and like unreleased podcasts and demo tracks, a bunch of cool stuff in there that people can. We've got a pretty big community in there now of subscribers, which is super dope. But you can access all of it off my website.
All right. Awesome, man. And also, everyone, check out – well, yeah, first off, check out Jared Morse. Great music. You guys will love him. Also, check out Ray's Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. We're on all the socials, all that shit. Nowadays, I just say Google us because I'm bad at doing plugs personally. But yeah. Just give us a Google. Give Jared a Google, too.
Join his
Patreon.
http://www. www. Where can we find you?
Yeah. We got to all have QR codes on our foreheads just tattooed so we can just scan each other.
Oh, gosh. Mark of the Beast. Holy cow. Totally.
Yeah, never mind. I hope Elon's not listening or Joe Rogan or anything.
But, that's a whole other podcast right there.
Yeah, for real. We'll have to start one up, just conspiracy theories. Jared, again, thank you, man. I appreciate it. Everyone check him out. And also, thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next time. My boots would look good on your bed. And I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. Take you home tonight. Make a mess of this simple